you will hear no in your life. And one of the things you have to push through is just because other people can't see your value doesn't mean you're not valuable.
Yeah.
And so that's like, don't get discouraged with that, right? You have to be hopeful. Also being realistic of your skill sets and whatnot. But it's, yeah, don't like let the no be the no in your life forever.
Hello, hackers. Thanks a lot for joining us for another episode of the Hacking UI podcast, where we hack our way through product design, development, and creative entrepreneurship. I'm David Tintner.
And I'm Sagi Schreiber. This will be the 8th episode of the 3rd season of the Hacking UI podcast that we call Scaling Your Career. In this season, we have 10 amazing guests for you that are leaders from a variety of different backgrounds. For this season, we are thrilled to have 2 amazing sponsors with incredibly useful products for you, Envision and FreshBooks.
So I bet you all know Envision. So today I want to talk to you about designbetter.co. The education team over at Envision created an amazing source of quality learning material for product designers. They interviewed dozens of leading designers and companies like Google, Airbnb, Netflix, Facebook, Slack, and more. And basically they did that in order to discover the design practices that they use in order to help everyone, their audience, which is us, transform our design process and push our organizations to the limits. So don't forget to hit designbetter.co. It's an amazing resource. They have 4 books that they published. They have an amazing podcast of their own. Be sure to subscribe to it. And they have workshops for designers, so you can check those out as well. So I really recommend it. It's just amazing.
FreshBooks is the perfect accounting software for freelance designers and developers or creative entrepreneurs with a small business. FreshBooks is built from the ground up to work for people like us, let's say non-accountants. They have some really powerful features like integration with Stripe, expense tracking, and a customer support team that actually picks up the phone and works with you to find the perfect solution. Actually, my favorite part about FreshBooks is the super smart notifications they send, which show you the highest priority task you can do right now in order to improve your business. Again, if you're an experienced accountant and you're looking for the all-powerful analytical monster of a tool, okay, this is not it. But if you're like us and you're just looking to get some understanding of your business and keep track of things without wasting hours of your time, then this is exactly what you need. If you want to see what it's all about, FreshBooks gives you a 30-day free trial and doesn't even require a credit card to log in.
Okay, one more message before we begin. After this episode, we're taking a 3-week break from releasing the final 2 episodes for this season. So be sure to stay tuned and subscribe on your favorite podcast app to be notified when a new episode will be released. Okay, so on to our episode today. Our guest today is an inspiring designer and fellow podcast host who, by her own guts and will, turned herself into an official design advocate at Google. In this conversation, we talk about her story and the way she got her job at Google. We also talk about the imposter syndrome that we all have and how, you know, we feel unworthy and what we should do about it. We talk about storytelling, marketing, self-promotion, and selling, and why it's super important for us designers to learn how to do that. We talk about the importance of networking and reaching out to people. And of course, a little about Google Material Design. This was a one-on-one interview that I had with her while at the Google Developer Summit in Krakow, Poland. So it was so fun being there and actually, you know, being in a Google environment and having that discussion with her. So, ladies and gents, it's our pleasure to present to you the one and only Yasmin Evian. Let's get hacking! What's up, everybody, and welcome to the Hacking UI podcast. And today we have with us Yasmin Evian. What's up, Yasmin?
Hey, everyone. How's it going?
So I'm very happy to have you here. Just to give a bit of context to everyone who's listening, today David is not with us, just me here with Yasmin, and we're at the Google Developer Days conference in Krakow, Poland. And basically, it's an amazing opportunity that they actually allowed us to have, they built a podcast room here in the venue, and they allowed everyone who wants to interview anyone just have a go at it. So I invited Yasmin to be with us on the show. So thank you very much for agreeing and coming here on the show.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. So yeah, as you said, we're in Poland right now. So I am dealing with some jet lag since I came from San Francisco. So excuse me if some of my words are maybe not coherent. But yeah, so we're at Google Developer Days in Europe, which is really great that they build this podcasting studio to really just give people an opportunity to interview some of the voices that you'll hear on stage, which I think is pretty epic.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. And also, like, it's a very cool room. I'll add pictures.
It's it kind of feels like a little interrogation room, though, because we only our lights, our faces are lit up. But Maybe they'll make it more exciting.
Very dark.
It's a pretty cool looking room. I'm sure the pictures will come out.
You can do an interrogation style podcast. That'll be fun. So yeah, Yasmin, I invited you over because you're a designer and you're a design advocate at Google. You also had a podcast of your own and you grew a marvelous career. And I think that your story needs to be heard. So I would like to ask you, how about we start with a bit of background and just like fill us in about like how you came to be a designer and then like as a designer, how you got to the point of where you're at right now.
Yeah. It's been a wild and interesting journey for sure. You know, when I went, so I actually started off going to community college and I was taking a lot of my general eds. And one of the general eds I had to take was a computer course. Mm-hmm. And so I was looking through the catalog and I see that one of the computer courses is a Flash class. If anyone remembers, the Flash or the web, you know, having Flash on the web. And I was like, I think that's that thing on websites. Like, that seems cool. I'm going to take that. So I ended up taking the course and I really enjoyed it. And it was actually my professor that brought it to my attention. And he said, hey, you're actually pretty good at this. Because I was like building like interfaces, like if map interfaces and drawing and all this stuff on it.
All right.
And I was like, really? Okay, like cool. And he's like, have you considered this as a career? And at that point, I was like, you can do a career in this? Like, I'm just completely oblivious to the fact that there's these fields and careers in design and tech and all that. Because that's just, I didn't have a lot of examples that had that growing up. And so he said, there definitely is. And I went home and like did some research and found out that the local university had a degree in like internet and web development. And that's what I decided to pursue. And so that's kind of how it kicked it off for me. So I actually started off as a like front-end dev and a web designer. But as you might be aware that a lot of times when people come to you, like if they like a small business or someone wants a website, they don't necessarily go, hey, we need a front-end developer, we need a designer. Like we need a website and you can build it and you can design it for us, like make it work. So although technically I knew how to implement the design, but it was more of just already building on those skills of doing design up front.
Yeah.
So I started off doing a lot of the web stuff, did a lot of freelance work from agencies and whatnot. And then that slowly like started to turn into more of like app design and, you know, the interaction design and stuff. So I was at some agencies in Arizona. So we did a lot of freelance work and agency work. But in Arizona, the tech scene is a little interesting that we do have big companies and it's growing right now. So we're originally from Phoenix, Arizona. But one of the things that I found out in like that career is that the agencies had a little bit more of that creative culture, which I really appreciated. And it did allow me to work with a lot of different startups. So that was kind of the evolution of that in terms of getting into design.
Mm-hmm. And what year was it exactly?
That's a great question. Let's see. So I started off doing an internship for a product design and development firm in Arizona my junior year of college. So that would have been, I think, like, I want to say 2009. I don't know.
Okay.
Don't quote me on that, I guess, because...
Yeah, no, I'm just like, I'm going back. Like, I started, I think, 2007, something
maybe.
Like that. Yeah, we started pretty much at the same time.
Yeah, cool. Around the same time, yeah. So, and before that, actually, before I got my internship, the thing that really kicked it off was I did a lot of, like, nonprofit work that they reached out to me to do, like, a lot of their branding and website and all that stuff, which was interesting because I remember... I was driving a couple years later after that, and I still saw the logo that I created, and it was such a terrible logo, and I won't say the name of what it was because I'm so embarrassed that, like, I was like, oh no, that is like plastered on people's cars. I'm embarrassed right now. But so I think that was actually in 2008. So yeah, it's been
a journey. We all have those dark moments, things that we're embarrassed of. I actually thought of one day maybe doing a website of all like my previous designs, you know, up to now, just to... show people that
you're a brave person.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that is something you definitely see. You promote your best work, right? Like, ultimately, you don't really want to have your bad work out there, which is unfortunate because I think that a lot of people that are getting into design, they see only like the pristine and the best and don't really see the evolution with that. But I mean, I think like originally I did do some like the branding and, you know, the website. Like, it was just like all a full package in terms of what I was working on. But then as like I learned more about myself and the skills that I had, evolving more into like UX design and thinking more of like the strategy behind it also too, and focusing on product, which I think is like one of the parts that I excel like more in. You know, I think one of the things as a designer, and a lot of people will probably think like, oh, designers, like everyone has to be this fantastic visual designer. And I'm just gonna be straight up honest, like that is not my strength at all. And that was always a hard part because I think as when you're starting off as designers, if you're like owning your own craft, you want to be great at everything. So it's like the visuals, and if you want to do the code, and you want to like just be able to present this entire package. But I think sometimes the best is understanding what are the skills and things that you bring to the table, and working with other people that bring these other skills that are even like more excellent, because you're going to create a better product.
Mm-hmm. Cool. So basically, you worked at an agency, you worked as a freelance. And what would you say most excited you back in the day, like in terms of the work itself, the craft?
Yeah, I think it was always the story that they were telling. So whether that was working at an agency or like, you know, nonprofit work, or when I was meeting with the business and before I kicked off the project, that first like meeting of finding out about what they're wanting to do, what they're wanting to accomplish, and like hearing their story was always the thing that really I gravitated to. Because ultimately, what is design if not a way to tell a story, or a way to, you know, bring people into a story also? And so I think that was always my favorite part of like, okay, what is your goal and can we help you achieve it? Like, how do we help you get there? You know, I did a lot of marketing and product work. So I think that's kind of the blend of it all for me, that I worked in both of those worlds, which is great as a design advocate because you end up taking on a whole bunch of that. Yeah. But yeah, I think it was always a story that excited me the most.
I think that also, by the way, when you say like, you know, we worked at marketing and product design, I think like designers that don't have marketing or don't want to do any marketing work, like marketing designs, I think they lack stuff when they come to product design, because marketing is so important to anything, including ourselves as people. And storytelling is the most important thing that we can think of in terms of like design and anything, basically. You know, even marketing, it's say, you know, the best thing about marketing is storytelling. You know, anything like in selling, you know, the best thing about selling is storytelling. I think storytelling is like an important piece of every craft. And the marketing part of it is something that, you know, in product design, our job is to connect like people with brands. You know, and the brand part is the marketing part. So basically, you know, in product design, we create that emotional connection, emotional spark between the people and the brand. So yeah, marketing is important. So it's a good skill to have.
Yeah, you have to have a good product in order to market it. But at the same time, if you have this excellent product, but you haven't found a way to get that out to the world, no one's going to know it exists. And then at the same time, if you spend a lot of energy marketing and building this thing, and then people actually get to the product and it doesn't achieve its purpose and goal, then yeah, I mean, I think they work very clearly. But yeah, it's really, for me, it's just about building that story. And also, like, as you're guiding us, like from UX, you know, like, what is the story of the user? Like, how are they interacting with us? And how is this product going to play into that role? I think it's really important. Yeah, I think one of the biggest things as a designer is one of the things that people ask me, like, okay, what makes a good designer? Like, what are some of the skill sets that you can have? And the things that I always go back to is, first, problem solving. Like, you need to be able to solve a problem and really think about, you know, the challenges and all the thing. But one of the things that I actually think is really vital and really important, and I think you would agree with me on this, is being able to communicate your design and being able to, you know, talk about it. Because I think, sure, you know, a lot of times you're in a lot of meetings with the client and you're presenting a design, and essentially you have to sell them on this, on why they want to do that. Because, you know, a lot of people have a lot of opinions on what they think the design should be, and you need to be able to articulate why you went this route.
Of course. I think that's also about storytelling, by the way. Like, there's a particular method that I use when I present designs, which is basically like, it's based on storytelling about the whole like flow. I think that in terms of, yeah, like everything you're saying makes total sense. And that's a skill set like of any designer, that you should think about the overall experience and should aim for that. And when they present their designs, of course, you should be backed up by, you know, thinking about the overall experience. And if you miss a piece, someone will catch you on that. You can't get away with that. All right. So we talked about your kind of like a professional life up to the point of when you also decided to open your podcast, your own podcast, right?
Yeah.
So let's talk about that. Like, what made you open your own podcast? And how did you get even started with Google? And
yeah, that's an awesome story. So I remember, I think it was, what was it, 2015 when Material Design was announced. Mm-hmm. No, sorry, 2014. I'm getting my dates wrong. Yeah. So 2014, Material Design was announced. And I remember watching the Google I.O. keynote when Matias Duarte came on to and announced Material Design. And I'm a huge like Android nerd. So of course, everything Google puts out, like, I'm just excited to watch it from like a tech perspective. Yeah. And one of the things that as designers, you know, I would always get a lot of grief. I was like, oh, you like Android, all right, why aren't you using Apple or iOS? And I'm like, I love the green robot. But when Material Design was introduced, it was just kind of this moment of like, oh my goodness, like, Google finally gets design. Like, this is it, right? Like, this is the beginning of it. And I remember I was Chromecasting it to like from YouTube onto my living room, and I'm like sitting at the edge of my couch, and as he's announcing this, and I'm just kind of like squealing of excitement because I'm like, oh my goodness, this is amazing. This is going to change Android apps and everything and just moving forward. And I kind of made this, vow to myself or whatever you want to call it, but I was like, I'm going to go to Google I.O. 1 year. Like, that's like one of the goals, like I'm going to make this happen. And I knew that it was really competitive to get to Google I.O. just because they have like the lottery system, which is hard to get in. But I was just like, I don't know how it's going to happen, but I'm going to do it. Fast forward a year later, and I was able to go via Women Tech Makers. Like, I applied to go via Women Tech Makers, which is a great organization at Google that helps women in tech, you know, come to events and get more involved and connected. And I got an invite, and it was one of those things where it was like a gamble because I was like, I know how hard it is. And I remember when I actually got my invite from Women Tech Makers that said, like, you're invited to come to Google I.O., I called my husband, like, right away, and I was like, oh, my goodness, like, I got this invite, like, you know, he's not a tech guy. So he's like, you know, like he's really excited for me, but he's like, what? And I was like, you don't understand, like it's almost impossible to get in. And he was really excited. And Anyways, you know, went to, what was it, 2015, to the Google I.O. conference. And of course, I was fangirling, talking to all the developers and designers of the products that I really enjoyed using. One of those was Pocket Cast. Shout out to Pocket Cast, the team over there. And Russell Ivanovich, he is one of the creators of Pocket Cast. And I reached out to him because he's well known in the Android community.
Pocket Cast, like, by the way, is a podcasting app.
Yes, sorry. Yes.
Anybody doesn't know?
Yes, it's a podcasting app. Yeah. Hopefully you're listening to this podcast on that app. So I connected with him and I messaged him on Twitter and I was like, hey, I'd love to connect and like chat. And he said, yeah, I'll be there. Let's chat. And at that time, I had actually just had like one or two episodes, I think one episode out from this other podcast that I had, that it was a short podcast that ended up like two episodes. And he had listened to that podcast on the way to Google I.O. Mm-hmm. Little did I know that when Russell was at Google I.O., he was looking for a third co-host for Material Podcasts. He had already got Andy Inako, he's well known within the podcasting community, and he was looking for a third host. And so we connected and chatted, and just the entire team over at Shifty Dolly is just really down to earth, the team from Australia. And we connected, and afterwards, like after the conference, it was great, met a lot of wonderful people. And I got a message from Russell because we had exchanged contact info, and he said, hey, I'm just going to come out here and say this. And I was like, okay, what is this going to be? I'm so confused. And he goes, you know, I'm starting this podcast on Relay FM, and I think that you would be the excellent third co-host for this.
Yeah.
And it was one of these things where I was like, wait, what? You know, like me? Okay, what? You know, I'm not a podcaster. I only released one episode, but I loved Android and I loved Google, and I, you know, knew this was an awesome opportunity. So I did it. And that really did, I think, you know, push my career to another level in terms of, you get better at communicating with podcasts. Like, you just get more comfortable with having conversations and just talking about stuff and your ideas. And that's something that I had to work on a whole lot. And that actually made me a better designer, because when I was in the client meetings, I was able to like articulate, yeah, this is why we're doing this. This is one of the reasons, like, what are your questions? And being able to have that discussion back and forth.
Yeah.
So that, yeah, podcasting is a great mechanism, even just to get your ideas and get you comfortable talking to people.
I think so too. And just to bring you back to that moment where you, you know, even thought of releasing a podcast episode back then, what made you kind of like start that? What was the spark?
Yeah. So, you know, I loved being in tech, but all the podcasts that were out there, I enjoyed listening to podcasts, but all of them were white men talking about Apple. And I was like, I want something more. And of course, there was awesome podcasts about Android and Google, like all about Android, but I really wanted to create something different with my friends. So we created this podcast with two other designers, and we were all Android users. So it was kind of this like, it wasn't an Android podcast, but Android focus in terms of the experience and UX, because we're all UX designers. So that's kind of the spark of just wanting, it's like, I can either complain about not having this voice on there, or I can be the voice that I want, you know?
Yeah.
So that was kind of the initial spark of wanting to do that.
Okay. Awesome. And I think also like your specific passion for Android and Google, where do you think that came from?
Yeah, that's a good question. Like, I'm trying to think of where that came from. I think I mean, I was always kind of interested in tech and in computers, like not so much as a kid. We had like one computer that we did a lot of the schoolwork on, but I don't know where the spark of that came. I think just always being interested in how like apps work and products and stuff like that. So like the interaction design of it. And I think Android was always really interesting to me over Apple or over iOS was more because of what you could do with Android, that it was this kind of, it gave you the liberty to be creative and do what you'd like with it. Yeah. Whereas in iOS, the experience was much more, this is what you're going to get from, we're crafting this entire experience for you, which can be good. But I guess Android always felt like it gave me the freedom to do, express myself in different ways.
Okay, cool. And also, I want to talk about the point where you reached out to those people before Google I.O. And I think it's something that not a lot of people do. You know, they don't reach out to people they want to reach out to. And they don't even think it's a possibility sometimes. So how about you talk about that? What made you just do that?
Yeah, that's a great point. Like, I think a lot of people will come to events and they're scared. But the worst thing you can get is a no if you ask someone to, like, say hi. But also being respectful of that. So as someone that is, you know, now a design advocate at Google, like, where it's also really busy time, but I'm more likely to be like, hey, like, can we just say hi for a few minutes at the conference? Like, I'm going to be there. Like, let's just say hi or grab coffee. That's a quicker, like, yeah, I'm totally up for it. Like, come find me or whatnot. Yeah. Versus, like, can we go to lunch or dinner? Like, that's, like, asking a lot of commitment from the time. So I think one of the things that I would encourage people, it's, like, definitely go reach out to the people that you admire and, like, look up to and you think is, like, having great influence, because the worst thing they can say is no.
Yeah.
And there's that, right? And also, but don't take it personal if people say no. It's not so much that they don't want to. It's like they probably, their schedules are pretty packed. But yeah, like, just go out and do it. And I think, you know, when I reached out to Russell, seeing him on Twitter is like where I messaged him and I was like, hey, I'm going to be here. Will you be there? Like, or you want to connect? And he said, yeah, definitely. Like, come meet me. We're going to be in the community area. So yeah. So I think there's definitely that fear though of like, oh no, what about if they say no and they think I'm a dork or whatever. But it's like, I mean, we're all kind of nerds. So just go for it.
Yeah, totally. I think that one of the things that I heard someone say to me is someone reached out to me and I think it was a Dribbble invite. And then I was like, sure, like, here's a Dribbble invite. And I told her, just because you reached out to me.
Yeah.
Because you weren't afraid to reach out.
Yeah.
And she said, I was taught that I always have a no. I always have a no until I have a yes. So I already have the no if I don't reach out to you.
Yeah.
So if I do, I might still have that no, but I might also get a yes. So I think that's like a very interesting approach to that, you know?
Yeah, like, yeah, it's always going to be a no if you don't ask.
Yeah.
I also think, like, one of the things that I loved about podcasting when I did have Material Podcasts was the connection I did make with a lot of the listeners. And, you know, you're speaking to a mic and you have, like, you're having a dialogue with whoever you're hosting with. But you sometimes forget that other people actually tune in and listen, because it's like, I don't know if we're just like not thinking about it, or we're maybe thinking too humble, like, oh, people actually want to listen to what I have to say, but tune in. But the thing that always really warmed my heart was when people actually did reach out to me, whether that was on Twitter or things of that nature, and just say like, hey, you know, like, even inspiration, or I really liked it this, or having this discussion, like, that in itself, it actually, like, that makes me happy. Like, you know, we're talking about tech or we're talking about design and we're all this stuff, but like, you don't realize the impact that you are making and the connection that you are making with people on the other side.
Yeah.
And to hear that just from like an actual source of just saying like, hey, like, thank you so much for this. Like, that actually does warm my heart. So yeah. So don't be afraid. If you see me at an event, like, come say hi. Don't be afraid to just say hi and whatnot.
Yeah, totally. I think that also a podcast is like a great way. It's like you're in the person's ears, like they're in their home and you're talking to them. It's kind of like, in a way, it's intimate, you know? It's like a lot of people feel like they know you. Like, I feel like I know the people that I'm, you know, listening to on a daily basis. And I also, once upon a time, before this world was so global and podcasts were so popular, in order to get a mentor, you had to like find a mentor, you know, like, in a way. And you had to use like physical people in your area. But now the world is so open and the podcast thing allows you to actually hear people out and have them as your mentors in a way without them even knowing it. So that's the way I see it. I see this massive influence that you can have from just listening to podcasts. So I think it's a great, great thing. Anyways, back to your story. Like, okay, so you open up the podcast, not open, but you joined as a third host for Material Design and Material Podcast.
It was Material Podcast, although it was influenced by Material Design, if you look at the artwork. It was much more a technology podcast about Google and Android, but I brought always a design perspective to it.
Yeah, cool.
All right, so let's take a short break to talk about our sponsors, Envision and FreshBooks. So I bet you all know Envision and love Envision, but today I want to talk to you about designbetter.co. The education team over at Envision created this amazing resource of quality learning material for product designers. They interviewed dozens of leading designers at companies like Google, Airbnb, Netflix, Facebook, Slack, and more, basically to discover their design practices in order to help us learn from that and implement that into our organization. So first of all, they have a podcast that you really need to subscribe to. It's a great podcast. And also they have 4 books they put together. So you better head over to designbetter.co and check those out. Also, you can check out one-of-a-kind workshops for designers.
FreshBooks is the perfect accounting software for freelance designers and developers or creative entrepreneurs with a small business. FreshBooks is built from the ground up to work for people like us, let's say non-accountants. They have some really powerful features like integration with Stripe, expense tracking, and a customer support team that actually picks up the phone and works with you to find the perfect solution. Actually, my favorite part about FreshBooks is the super smart notifications they send, which show you the highest priority task you can do right now in order to improve your business. Again, if you're an experienced accountant and you're looking for the all-powerful analytical monster of a tool, okay, this is not it. But if you're like us and you're just looking to get some understanding of your business and keep track of things without wasting hours of your time, then this is exactly what you need. If you want to see what it's all about, FreshBooks gives you a 30-day free trial and doesn't even require a credit card to log in.
So you always brought the design kind of aspect to the podcast. So how would you say that kind of influenced your career?
Yeah, I think the biggest takeaway is being able to articulate the ideas in my head and get them out in audio format or voice or something. I think people can't know what you're thinking unless you get it out there somehow, whether that's voice, you know, writing, any other format that you can get that out, I think is really, really important. Yeah. And just practicing and doing it. Like, I mean, if you go back and listen to, I don't recommend people to listen to like one of the first episodes of Material Podcast. Yeah. It was rough. It was rough. Yeah. And I think one thing to remember is like, so Russell, Andy, and I, we started Material Podcast. I have never met Andy in person, and I met Russell in person once. And so like all three of us are essentially strangers that come together to build this podcast. And the thing that brings us together is our love for Android and Google. And so, yeah, like, you know, you don't necessarily feel comfortable at that moment. It's like that awkward stage. But as you see it develop, like, I just really did see the growth, and their encouragement was always amazing. I mean, Andy's like well-renowned in the podcasting industry, and he was just always so kind and generous and tips and feedback and all that stuff. And like, yeah. I guess just that opportunity to do it. But yeah, it's all about getting your thoughts and ideas out somehow.
Okay. And I think that connecting the dots to where you are right now.
Yeah.
What was that story? How did you come to basically, I don't know, being approached by Google, or how did that happen?
Yeah. So in my career doing UX design and like product management, one of the things that really stood out to me was design sprints. And so that's the thing that our team really advocates for. And so I was really interested in design sprints, and I had met some other design advocates, and I said, hey, like, who do I need to talk to like about design sprints? I want to know more questions about how to do this within like an agency, like, you know, what's going on? And one of the design advocates connected me to, so Nick Pitcher, he's a great guy, he's another design advocate, connected me with Kai Haley. So she's actually my manager now, and she's kind of like the design sprint person at Google, really leading a lot of that initiatives. And he connected me with her, and she was generous enough to get on a call with me and chat. And we had a great conversation. And it was this interesting part in the conversation where, because I was actually leading an event, AMP Camp for Girls, which is a day long or a week long day camp that teaches girls how to get into mobile app development on iOS and design. And so I was leading those efforts when I was on the call with Kai, and she's like, oh, what are you doing? And I go, sorry, I'm like at the school right now, I'm leading this camp. And we're having this discussion, and she goes, I need someone like you on my team. And I'm like, what? Like, where did this come from? Like, the fact that I'm even talking to you for me is already like, this is amazing. And then the fact that you're saying you need someone like me on your team, I was just like, oh my goodness, what is happening? But she didn't actually have a position open at that time. So she's like, reach out to me in the beginning of the year, and we'll connect, and let's see if we can do something. Mm-hmm. So time passed. I was at my company, and I was furloughed from my job like right around Thanksgiving before the holidays. And the company was in a rough spot. And so they were like, we hope to be able to bring you back in a couple of months, but right now, like, we just can't afford to keep you. So in that time, started looking for a lot of jobs.
Yeah.
And actually got a lot of no's, which was always, which is interesting now because it's like, well, now I work at Google, so I guess that was a good thing. But at that time, you know, it's not so much.
Yeah.
And I think it was, you know, I got rejected like twice. I got a rejection email, like two rejection emails or calls. And one day that was like kind of like, well, that didn't work out. So what do I have to lose? I'm going to reach out to Google again and see what's going on. And I said, hey, by any chance, you have an opening? And they actually did. And that started the whole process, you know, with the recruiter and all that jazz. So went through that whole thing.
How long was that?
Maybe a little bit over a month, which is actually pretty fast for Google space. They usually take a really, really long time.
Yeah.
But the thing was, I got a competing offer.
All right.
So I did like my first call with a recruiter, and then they scheduled me to like actually have my phone interview with one of the advocates. And this was on Wednesday. Mm-hmm. And I had my phone interview. I thought it went well, but like, of course, you never know yeah. what's going to happen. And the person was actually in London, so they were a few, you know, time zones away. Mm-hmm. And on Thursday, I got a competing offer, and I was like, "That's awesome!" But I'm interviewing for Google right now. Like, I'm not gonna, you know, I'm not gonna turn this down. How do I do this? But at the same time, not knowing if Google even wants to move forward with
yeah.
me. So I reached out to the recruiter, and I was like, "Hey, listen, I have a competing offer. Like, have you decided whether or not you want to pursue this process? Because yeah. it's a pretty intensive process." And they said, "Ask for an extension. Like, we haven't gotten the feedback from the interviewer. Just like, hold on a second." Long story short, by Friday the next day, I had my flights and stuff booked for next week for my interviews, and I was set to go.
Nice.
So did that process of interviewing on site at Google and preparing any things I needed to prepare to show. And yeah, I mean, and then the waiting game. And Google is known to, their hiring process is pretty extensive and long.
Yeah.
And at the same time, I have this other competing offer that I can't hold on forever. I need to like
yeah,
give them an answer.
Yeah.
And so anyways, it was just like, what do I do? What do I know? Like, I need to get a job and, you know, provide for my family. And I ended up, like the week I was supposed to hear back from Google and it was getting delayed, I ended up telling the other company, I was like, listen, I know you can't hold this forever. Like, I just can't take the job without, you know, yeah. knowing that I'm going to leave you if Google says yes type
yeah.
thing. I'm not sure if I would, I don't know if my recommendation for that for people, but that's just the way I did.
With a competing offer.
With a competing really, offer, yeah.
Competing offer, like for you, in your mind? With all your love for Google and everything? You know,
well,
like.
I mean, yes and no. So I was originally in Arizona and the competing offer was for a local company there, mm-hmm. which meant I would have been able to keep my family in Arizona and stayed, you know, yeah. both my husband and my family are both there and our daughter and everything is just there. Like,
yeah.
so that wouldn't have changed. But of course, that doesn't compete to Google, right? Like, I think the opportunity is,
yeah.
like, we couldn't turn it down. And it was something that we really did discuss a whole lot. Like, my husband and I was like, we have all of our family here and we have a daughter and, like, you know, do we want to do this? And we just came to the consensus, like, if we don't do this now, we're going to always regret it.
Yeah.
You know, we need to just go for it. And so we did the whole process. I ended up starting at Google and I started off in like the end of March, which meant that through April and May, my family was actually back home in Arizona because we didn't want to take my daughter out of school. And so, you know, working through that, that was definitely difficult. But I will just say that
kids, it's not.
Yeah, it makes it hard. But I just want to say something of like from Google and also from my manager and just the people there. They really do care about your family and they really do care about you as an individual. Mm-hmm. And so they were actually really graceful and great about like saying, hey, we'll let you work like from home 1 week each month just to see your family and all that stuff. So
yeah.
they were really accommodating. And one of the reasons why I did take the job, I do talk about my manager a whole lot, but, you know, I do look up to her in a lot of ways of like just her career and what she's done. But I think one of the things that really was like, yeah, this is the right fit was that, you know, she's like, you know, we want to make this process as easy as it can be for you and your family. And her understanding, I understand like what you're going through in terms of having to relocate your entire family and then being away from them for a while and being kind with that. So to me, I think, you know, Google as a whole in general, they're doing amazing stuff and the products and everything that I love. But also the thing that sinks out is that they actually do care about you, which I think is important. I mean, it's like I always encourage people like try to find a company that actually does care about you as an individual.
Yeah, I think that's one of the most important things because at the end of the day, it's all about people.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you're building products, at the end of the day, you're building it for a human on the other side and people.
Yeah.
And if your organization or work environment doesn't respect that, I think it might show in your products. But that's maybe just a thought for me. It's just like...
Yeah, totally. I totally agree. There's a lot of things that interest me in your story because, first of all, when you first talk to this to your manager that said they don't have an open position and that you have to wait, maybe talk to me at the beginning of the year, I think that in a way, did you already know back then that you were going to end up at Google? In a way, in your mind, kind of like already framed that reality in your mind?
No. For me, like, this all feels really surreal in a way of like, is this really happening? And so in my mind, for my manager to even say like, hey, I need someone like you on my team was just kind of this like moment of like, wait, what? Like, this is what, you know? So no, like, I think throughout the whole process, I just was like, I'm just going for it. I don't know what the answer is going to be. Mm-hmm. And it felt so far-fetched to be at Google and like interview this. But I think my whole mentality was, I do bring a lot of skills to the table. And like, I'm going to show that. I'm like kick butt and just be like, this is who I am. And this is and all this stuff that I'm going to work really hard to.
Yeah.
But at the same time, knowing like, even if this doesn't work out, the experience of being able to go through this, like, it's just in itself, I felt like something that could be really rewarding.
Yeah.
So there's definitely this whole like being hopeful that you could get this job. But at the same time, like, there's always this uncertainty of like, there's so many amazing people that are interviewing or, you know, doing that. Just like working at Google, it just feels so weird. So yeah, no, definitely did not feel like, yeah, for sure, I got this under the bag.
Yeah. So you're kind of like a design advocate of Google before you're a design advocate at Google, you know, officially.
Right.
So it makes sense, you know, connecting the dots and everything and your podcast and you promoting like Google in a way. It sounds just natural, you know, like when I'm talking to you. But it sounds like for you, it wasn't like obvious, you know.
I guess it was almost more of, okay, so when I did start interviewing or told people about the role that I was doing, everyone was just like, this is so perfect for you. But sometimes it's a little bit harder for you to see it. But I guess it's more of like, the role was so perfect for me, yes, because, you know, advocacy work, you do a lot of public speaking, reach out, you know, communication, a lot of stuff is built on that. And also understanding the material of design, not material design. I didn't mean to say that, but understanding the concept of what you're advocating for.
Nice.
So there we go. Unintentional. But like, people saw that. Maybe it's me more being less seeing that in myself, but it's just more of like, I know there's already so many amazing people and that work at Google or that are interviewing for the role, that just like not knowing if that was going to be the case.
Yeah.
But like, I mean, everyone I know, it's like, this role is perfect for you. Like, it fits you. It's so you. And I'm like, it is. It really is. It's perfect. It's just more of not knowing if other people would realize that. I think, like, to bring it back there is like, you know, when I was interviewing for other companies, I did get a lot of no's.
Mm-hmm.
But then Google gave me a yes. And so you will hear no in your life. And one of the things you have to push through is, just because other people can't see your value doesn't mean you're not valuable.
Yeah.
And so that's like, don't get discouraged with that, right? You have to be hopeful. Also being realistic of your skills, thoughts and whatnot. But it's, yeah, don't like let the no be the no in your life forever.
Yeah, totally. I think it's a match kind of thing. Right. I mean, you might get no's, all right, but I don't know what companies you interviewed for, but probably didn't fit you and you didn't fit them. You know, like, I think that some of the great things that we get as opportunities are things that they fit what we built mm-hmm. in order to fit into that opportunity. I'm just, for example, I'm working with a client right now. And when I told a few people about that, I'm looking to work with a client. I just started like a couple months ago, that I want to take on one client. Like, I want to work only with one client. I want like to get paid well, because that's what I'm doing. I'm consulting like at a very high level. And, you know, I have all those skills of like managing design teams at scale and like working with products that have millions of users. And then I talk to a few people with companies which are very, very big, but don't accept that. They don't right. understand. So it's like, how much do you want to charge? Are you crazy? Are you crazy? You'll never be able to get that much in the market. Never.
Yeah.
And I was actually, in a way, I was starting to believe it. And then I had mm-hmm. to convince myself again that no, they just don't know. I'm not a good fit for them, and they're not a good fit for me. Although they're a big company, and you know.
Yeah.
And I heard also like a few no's of people are like, "Are you crazy? This is too much for us. Like, you're charging too much." But then, you know, as soon as I said, I kind of said like, "Fuck it. I'm going for what I want, and I'm going to find the company that appreciates my skills and my experience, and that is, you know, appreciate me as an individual and wants to work with me." And as soon as I said that in my mind, a week later, I have two clients waiting for me to say yes.
That's amazing.
For exactly what I wanted in terms of like pricing. So I think that's why I asked you about like, if you decide in your mind, I think that the stuff that we envision sometimes in terms of like what we want to achieve, it's just like when you ask the universe for something, you know, the universe kind of brings it to you in a way. I don't know how to, you know, describe it, but that's the thing that I felt back then.
Yeah, it's subconsciously.
Yeah, subconsciously you were already at Google. I think that, I mean.
Yeah, I guess, yeah, it was like you're already doing the role, but just, yeah. I guess, weren't getting paid for it. Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a cool experience and everything still feels surreal. I mean, I've, since joining Google when we're recording this, it's been here about 5 months, a little bit over 5 months, and I'll be visiting like 5 different countries. So it's a great experience. I love the design advocate team and other areas that we work with products. You know, it's just a great thing.
Yeah.
You know, as design advocates, we do get to speak a lot and also educate. But the thing that I love so much about this role is that we literally exist to help other designers and developers build better human-centered experiences, yeah, you know, on Google's platforms. And that's pretty cool. Like, yeah, I get to impact the ecosystem by helping other designers become better at that. And so there's different ways that we achieve that, whether we're creating content or not. But it's just it's a pretty awesome gig that you're just helping people. And I think, yeah, there's a lot of ways that it fits into me, but maybe I just didn't have the confidence in myself to do that. And I think that sometimes that is something that you need to like build up.
I think maybe yes, but again, like, yeah, I'm, you know, you proved that maybe there's other things that you can build up that will, yeah, make up for lack of confidence, yeah, sometimes. I think that you got out of your comfort zone, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you have a family, you have a daughter, yeah, like, yeah, moving to a different country.
Definitely.
Even thinking of that.
Yeah.
Right. So you consider that opportunity and you said, yes, if that happens, I'm going to do it. Right. And you reached out to people,
right,
when you weren't like confident enough, maybe, but you did. You reached, yeah, out to those people and you met them and you said yes to opportunities. And I think that once you get out of your comfort zone and you take initiative, you, right, achieve greatness. So that's the thing that I'm, yeah, saying, like, you know, about your, yeah, story. So we don't have much time. That really sucks that I wanted to get into design sprints and into like everything, yeah, that you're doing at Google right now. Can you say like in a couple words, yeah, what most excites you right now about what you're doing in your current job?
Yeah, I think, you know, we work with a lot of product areas and one of the things that we do focus on is material design. Mm-hmm. And, you know, is my whole story kicks off at Scene in 2014, Scene Matias Duarte announced material design and just being so excited for this.
Yeah.
And, you know, that really does shape a lot of my excitement of Google and Android. And now being a part of Google and being able to work with the material design team is really fantastic. I think the thing that gets me most excited as well is that we're in this space where we're really building up material design as a unified system. I think when people think of material design, they just think of the guidelines and like the quote unquote rules of what to do and what not to do.
Yeah.
And while those are like really vital into experience, it's more about the principles of material design. And we're really working with a lot of people to adapt those principles into their app and have a different, but your brand still comes out in that. Yeah. We're really encouraging people. But I think one of the other things that really excites me is that we're really just building material design to be this unified system that is a system and a source for resources and tools, as well as, you know, the guidelines and all of that, which is something I'm really excited about. You know, there's the Gallery Early Access Program. Gallery is one of the tools that Material Design created.
Yeah, it's amazing. I saw it yesterday.
Yeah, it's a great thing with like helping designers, developers communicate. And the coolest thing is that you can write comments on video like different times. So like if you're editing a video, you could add a comment at like 5 seconds and be like, hey, we need to move this transition or whatnot. But like it's done in a cool way. I mean, there's more to this whole collaborative process. But the thing that I really want to push is like the fact that material design is really just building up to that. And to be a part of that journey and being able to help designers, you know, design with material design and all the things that we're providing to just be able to access that is amazing. I think, you know, technology is always growing and, yeah, changing with different interfaces, which is, you know, the voice interface and all these things that we're working with. But I think the other thing that our team does really well is that we focus on design sprints because we believe that is a great way to encourage cross collaboration across engineering, development, product, everything to just really create this product, which I think that is one of the biggest things at the root of like everything. It's like we can teach you how to design with pixels, but ultimately design is never done and is always evolving and technology is always evolving. So how do we make you think of which of the problem and the challenge that you have and how to solve for it with your entire team and bring, yeah, everyone's skill to it? So it's just an amazing opportunity to be a part of this and advocate for that.
Yeah, I think I was certified like of Google Sprints in 2015 in the first GD Summit. So we had 2-day seminar and I recently ran my first sprints with the client.
Awesome.
So it was, yeah, an amazing experience. And ever since 2015, I've been taking stuff from design sprints and implementing it into my work. For instance, I don't do wireframes anymore. I do collaborative sketching with whoever needs, like with decision, yeah, makers. And that's like that kills wireframes for me, like whenever I need to, right? Because you just sketch out the thing with the person that is actually, you know, in charge, like the CEO or the PM. Anyways, yeah, design sprints are amazing.
Amazing, yeah.
I think that gallery is very interesting. Okay, we have a few more minutes, okay?
Yeah.
But can you say just like a couple words about gallery? I mean, there's tools out there, design tools, Envision, Zeppelin, all those design tools to collaborate and share on designs. How is gallery different and what is it doing right now? What's the main purpose?
Yeah, so gallery exists to help with the design and development handoff and that collaboration and communication that happens between that. The biggest thing that I would say that is really excites me about gallery, being able to leave comments on video like at a certain time, like is pretty cool. But also they have this iteration thing where they have a sketch plugin. You upload your artboards and then people can have comments and then you upload the next iteration of the design and you have it always visible. Like when you send out a link, you can share that to your teammates to collaborate on that and be like, hey, here's, you know, go update, add comments to the design. And the greatest thing is that when you share that link, it's always going to have the newest version of the design, but you can go back and look at all the different iterations and see the comments and know how you got there. Because I think so much of the whole design process is the steps that you took, not so much the final destination, right? Mm-hmm. And so being able to know what is that final, you know, it kind of removes the whole sharing of boards or collections of final, no really final version three, final, you know, thing, trying to solve that. I think that's one of the biggest things that kind of gets me excited about it. It's in the early access program right now. So it's just early access. Like this isn't the final product.
Yeah.
And so what can it become and what can I do? Like it just excites me.
No, it's amazing. All right. So when is it getting out of early access?
You know, I don't know the answer to that, but if you go to material.io/gallery/EAP, you can sign up for the early access program.
Cool.
And it's great. You do have to be a G Suite user. So there's that is one difference.
Which most companies are, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hopefully. Go on Gutenberg. I'm just kidding.
I'm not gonna pitch it,
but cool. Okay.
Last thing. Lightning round.
Oh, lightning round. All right, ready to go.
All right, cool. What are your tips for designers starting out? Your biggest tip, one tip.
Okay, pen before pixel. So start sketching ideas before you even hit the pixel or even hit the code. Anything, sketch out different ideas. It will make you try different designs without feeling like you're completely married to a design that you're building already with the pixels.
Cool. What things do you find that come from your background as a designer and as a person that help you in your day-to-day work right now?
Yeah, I think, you know, like my background of doing some dev helps me better understand the people that I'm working with in terms of understanding like the limitations of what some of the tech is. Mm-hmm. So that when we're building designs, I think as designers, we need to understand like the platform and build with that in mind so that we in turn create like the best user experience. So I think that's really helpful.
Totally. Can you name one podcast, blog or book that you recommend to our listeners?
Ooh. Okay. All right. I'll give it out. So Design Notes is by Liam Spradlin. He's another designer advocate on my team. Design Notes already exists, but spoiler alert, it's coming out back on Google. So it's going to be released. So check that out when on there. And another podcast that Google Design is putting out is Method Podcast, which is a great one where you get to hear from Googlers within the company in design, talk about their projects and how they approach something. So go to google.design and you'll be able to find both of those podcasts on there.
Awesome. All right. And do you have a favorite tool, app, or software that you use regularly and do not think enough people know about?
Gallery. I think just like, you know, keep an eye on material.io. I think we're going to be working on some things that are really going to excite designers and helping them with tools and resources to really build the best apps experiences. So yeah, keep on going back to material.io. We update it with new products that we're working. We have like a whole bunch of tools. Like there's the color tool, which is really neat. There's Remixer, which helps you like look at different designs on your phone, you know, interacting with them. Like, I mean, there's a lot of cool stuff. So go check out material.io. We have a lot of tools that we have people out there.
All right. So where can we connect with you offline? That's the last question.
And so I am at Yasmin Evian on Twitter. You're going to have to spell it out for everyone on the thing.
No problem.
But that's the best way to find me.
Notes.
Yeah, in the show notes. Go to the show notes.
Twitter.
Find me there.
Awesome. All right. Yasmin, thank you so much for being on the podcast. It was amazing. Really fun talking and hearing your story.
Yeah. Thanks so much for having me. It's been a great experience.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right, everyone, and that's a wrap.
We hope you enjoyed this episode, and if you did, please consider sharing it with a colleague or a friend that you think would benefit from listening to it.
And if we may ask, one more thing. Please rate us on iTunes. This will help the podcast reach more audience and make us so happy. You only have to do this once, not every episode, and it has tremendous impact.
Thanks a lot, hackers, and we'll see you on the next episode.
Woo-hoo.